Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today, together with Mr. Dennis Hart. Thank you for listening.
Ursula, it's becoming quite a tag team, isn't it? Dennis and Ursula on Fridays. I'm glad to be back in the ring with you again today.
I am going to miss you when you go back to California, Mr. Snowbird.
Oh, hush on that now. That's not for a few weeks. We're here until then. How's that?
Well, thank you for listening in to you who are on the other end of this radio. And we, as always, are going to start our Friday off with the intrepid Mr. Hart with a summary of the local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Thanks, Ursula. And we're going to start with a look back at last Saturday's Tribune, which reported that officials from the Ames School District gave an update on their plans for the new high school and raised warnings about student mental health support during a Chamber of Commerce forum last Friday. The board expects to start getting bids for the $105 million high school project next spring and move into the new Ames High in 2022. But the district is still working through some design challenges, among them parking, because the new building is going to be built in the current general parking lot. Meanwhile, School District Superintendent Jenny Reisner said Iowa's mental health services are near the bottom of the nation compared with other states, and she said the district's teachers need tools and support to address student needs. Saturday's Trib also reported that farm income is expected to decline nationwide almost twice as much as had been estimated earlier this year. The latest reports from the U.S. Department of Agriculture predicts that farm income will decline by nearly $10 billion this year compared to last. Iowa State Ag economist Chad Hart said the decline shows how much farmers are being affected by the trade war between the U.S. and several of its trading partners. Saturday's Trib also had word that the Ames Children's Theater was issuing a call for middle school and high school-aged writers to help with a collaborative project called Play with Words. This Sunday, September 9th, a workshop's going to be held at the Ames Public Library, and young writers are encouraged to take part. They'll be working on pieces for submission to the Play with Words onstage production, which is going to take place next March. The big story in Sunday's Tribune, the amazing events of last Saturday night. Maybe you were there. When lightning and heavy rain caused the cancellation of Iowa State University's season-opening football game against South Dakota State at Jack Dry Stadium. The game was halted 4 minutes and 5 seconds into the first quarter, and it never restarted. The game was recorded as a no contest. It was the first Iowa State game to be canceled in 55 years. The last time, back in 1963, on November 23rd, to be exact, the day after President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Iowa State was supposed to play Drake that day, but of course, it did not. Also Sunday, the Tribune looked back at the long history of Yonkers Department Store, the retail institution which shut its doors for the final time in Ames last week. Yonkers' parent company had declared bankruptcy back in April, and Yonkers stores all across the country started shutting down. The store was founded in Iowa in 1856 and established its first store in Ames on Main Street in 1941. It moved to the newly built North Grand Mall in 1971. A North Grand spokesman told the Tribune, in his words, sentimentally, Yonkers being gone, that's a pretty big deal. Sunday's Tribune also had a report about last week's Farm Progress Show in Boone and how those taking part feel about the tariff disputes with other countries that have caused downturns in the commodities market. Those interviewed said they need to be able to trade to stay afloat. We'll have a guest who will talk about all of that on this broadcast live in just a few minutes. Sunday's Trib also had word about the so-called Flathead Reunion taking place in Ames through tomorrow. That's a gathering of people who own Pontiacs made between 1926 and 1954. The term flathead refers to old 6- and 8-cylinder engines that had valves in the block, not the head. Now, if you want to see some of these old cars, and who doesn't, they'll be in the parking lot at the Starlight Quality Inn, or you can see them tomorrow on Douglas Street, north of Main Street in downtown Ames, and that happens to be right where KHOI is located. And there was word about the annual Garden Quilt Show taking place at Ryman Gardens now through Sunday. The show encourages the art of quilting through displays of garden-themed quilts. The Tribune is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's edition had a long story about a dog named Kimber, a 3.5-year-old black lab who's the new therapy dog for the Collins Maxwell Elementary School. On the first day of school, Kimber was taken into every classroom and introduced to all the students. Kimber will usually stay in the special education classroom, but she can also be used to help any child who might be having a tough moment. And that is Kimber's number one mission in the school, to be a soothing presence for a child who needs one. Kimber was brought on board through the help of the community. Trained dogs, of course, are expensive, and the community fundraised around $6,500 for her and for her future expenses. Good luck, Kimber. Tuesday's Tribune also reported that construction at the intersection of Wilmoth and Tripp in Ames was set to start on Tuesday. The construction involves putting in new concrete and asphalt, as well as water main installation, stormwater improvements, and electric infrastructure. Street closure there is expected to last a couple of weeks, but that all depends on the weather. Drivers are being asked to use alternative routes through the area and to use caution when they're traveling nearby. Pets and children, well, they should be kept away from the construction zone. Also Tuesday, the Tribune featured a story about the history of the American Legion here in Ames. Post 37 received a temporary charter in June of 1919, with a permanent charter issued in 1923. Over the years, Post 37 had offices in several places on Main Street, finally buying the building owned by the International Order of Odd Fellows in 1947. And that's where the office is today, on Main Street. Wednesday's Tribune had word that streets and rivers were expected to crest at near flood stages later in the week as rain continued to pour over the area. The South Skunk River at Highway 30 was expected to reach 19 feet on Thursday morning, meaning that if there was flooding, it was not expected to impact nearby homes or residents. This after a series of thunderstorms just kept rolling through the area for several days. Meanwhile, Story County supervisors approved their wish list on Tuesday for contractors who want to land the job of repairing the County Justice Center's roof. The county wants to replace still wet or damaged insulation in the roof, improve drainage control, and get a 20-year warranty for damage caused by high winds. A hailstorm pummeled the building in May, punching about 300 holes in the roof that covers the county jail, courthouses, and numerous offices. Insurance providers deemed the roof a total loss. The county hopes to have a contractor start the project by mid-October, finish it maybe by the end of next January. Wednesday's Trib also reported that an Ames woman was arrested after authorities said she tried to smother a child in her home to stop it from crying. 41-year-old Venetia Denise Mosley is accused of child endangerment and assault with injury. Court documents reveal that police went to the 400 block of South 4th Street in Ames when a man said Mosley had grabbed a 3-year-old child's face and tried to use her hand to stop the child from crying. The man said Mosley punched him when he tried to intervene. Mosley would not cooperate with police and denied assaulting anyone. Also in Wednesday's paper, an update on the search for a man who disappeared 2 years ago in Jewell and has never been seen again. Jesse Leopold was 23 years old when he left his job in October of 2016 and vanished. His pickup truck was found on Canyon Road in Ledges State Park. It was unlocked and had the keys inside it. Boone County authorities have spent thousands of hours investigating Leopold's disappearance, but they have come up empty. And one more note from Wednesday's paper, word that Pixar's lighting director was set to speak at Iowa State University on Wednesday night. Danielle Feinberg of Pixar, her topic focused on how science and art can create new opportunities. She was also planning to meet with a few classes on campus to offer advice and share her personal experiences. Thursday's Tribune reported that the Iowa Democratic Party's lieutenant governor candidate came to Ames on Wednesday as part of a campaign tour to talk about the state's Medicaid program. A couple of years ago, then-Governor Terry Branstad changed the state's system from fee-for-service, in which providers would be reimbursed by the state, to a managed care system in which currently two out-of-state insurance companies contract with medical providers and reimburse them for the recipient's medical expenses. State Senator Rita Hart, the Democrat who is running for lieutenant governor, said Medicaid recipients are ready for yet another change because they are not better off in a privatized system. That's what she said. She did not offer any specifics about how Fred Hubbell, the Democrat running for governor, would reshape Medicaid or how long it would take, but she said the process would start the day Hubbell would take office if he were elected. Also Thursday, the Tribune had word that the Heart of Iowa Regional Transit Agency, known as HRTA, is now using a scheduling app and an online payment service for riders here in Story County. The scheduling app is called Amble. It will let riders not only set up their rides, but cancel rides, view upcoming rides, and even look back at previous trips. Amble can be downloaded onto a mobile phone. The online payment service is called Route Match Pay, and it will eliminate the need to have cash or tickets for each ride. And Thursday's Trib also had word about the annual Puffer Billy Days celebration in Boone, which runs today through Sunday. It's a celebration of the city's heritage and the railroads that run through it. There will be lots of events for everyone, including a parade and carnival, a food court, a quilt show, a motorcycle show, a pet show, and yes, even a spike driving contest. In today's Tribune, Fridays, word that the Skunk River overflowed its banks in parts of Story City early yesterday morning, causing some flooding at the golf course, on the high school football field and track, and in the city's north and south parks. The River Bend Golf Course was closed yesterday, and the 8th grade football team's game that was scheduled against Greene County yesterday afternoon, that one was moved to Grand Junction. Also today, the Tribune reports that frustrations over the effects of higher parking meter rates on Main Street in Ames boiled over yesterday during a meeting between city representatives and downtown business owners, who said the rate hike is driving customers away. The business people said they're seeing fewer customers since the rates went up in July, and that the customers they do have are complaining about the added costs. And one more note from today's paper. The Trib reports that Iowa State University's enrollment has gone down this year. This fall semester, the university enrolled nearly 35,000 students, still the biggest of any college or university in Iowa, but a nearly 3% drop from last fall's enrollment of almost 36,000 students. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Now, a bit later on this broadcast, the Tribune's editor, Michael Crum, is going to join us live here in the studio to talk about the current state of American journalism and journalism's relationship with President Trump, who has called the news media the enemy of the American people.
Who resided in Ames, Iowa, with Coming to You. And we're coming to you on KHOI's Local Talk.
We are happy you joined us. I'm Dennis Hart, along with Ursula Rutenberg, your host for today. And we're very happy to be joined by an expert on farming here at Iowa because he himself is a farmer, owns 3,000 acres in Hardin and Story counties, and you grow almost everything. You grow corn, you grow soybeans, you grow cattle, you grow hogs. Howard Hill, we are happy to have you with us. Thank you, and welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you.
In brief, we all know about the tariff wars that have been going on here for a while now. They've made headlines across the country. We've had reports that farmers are expected to lose billions of dollars because of tariffs, because other countries are imposing tariffs on us, we're imposing them on them, and in an effort to get a better deal. That's what President Trump says. In a nutshell, what's your impression of the impact these tariffs so far have had on farmers like you and Iowa farmers in general?
Well, they've definitely had an impact, particularly price of soybeans and hogs. We, as pork producers, I think we understand why the administration is trying to do what they're doing, especially with China. China has really stolen a lot of our science for years, and I think it's encouraging that we're trying to stand up to them. But it is having an impact on prices. Since March of this year to May, Dr. Dermot Hayes at Iowa State has estimated that we lost about $18 a hundred on the futures, which accounts for about $2 billion in losses. So it's significant. We're encouraged by the fact that we now have the makings of a deal with Mexico. The problem right now is that the 232 tariffs on steel and aluminum have not been removed from Mexico, so we still have the 20% tariff on pork going into Mexico, which we expect that to be removed fairly quickly. Exports are extremely important to the pork industry. We export about $6.5 billion worth of pork, which accounts for a little over 25% of all of our product. We export to 100 countries, but 40% of those exports go to Mexico and China, both countries we have big tariffs with right now.
Now, you indicated that there was a $2 billion loss in futures for soybeans alone?
No, that's for pork.
That's for pork.
Yeah.
What about the impact on soybeans? Corn.
I don't have a number, but, you know, right now your November futures are something like 8.39 or something like that. So with basis, you're probably under $8 for cash soybeans, which is below the cost of production. So soybeans have taken a pretty good hit.
Now, of course, you're diversified. You grow a lot of things. But many farmers are not. They're soybean producers or they're corn producers. And many of them, of course, are small farmers, family-owned farms. That impact on them must be greater per capita, in a sense, than it is for you, who are diversified in that. How are you? What are you hearing from them?
Yeah, it's going to be different for every farmer. For example, you know, back in the spring, you could have contracted this year's soybean crop for over $10. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different marketing program. Very few people are just corn or soybeans. Most farmers in Iowa, they are in a rotation. They'll plant half soybeans one year, half and half each year, rotate back and forth. But the corn price isn't very good either. That's mm-hmm. the other problem. In agriculture, we don't have stable prices. We recognize if you're going to be in this business, you're going to have highs and lows. You got to make hay when the sun shines, you know. So typically, when we go into the fall, we have more production, and we've had expansion in the hog industry over the last couple of years. So that's also impacting our prices, not just the tariffs. But we've got a fantastic group of people in our Washington, D.C. office for National Pork Producers Council, and they're working very closely with U.S. Trade Representative trying to get this resolved. We're asking that they finish the Mexico thing as quickly as possible, get Canada in NAFTA, and get free trade agreement with Japan. Japan's our number one export market by value. Mexico's our number one market by volume. China's number three and Canada's number four.
Of course, President Trump campaigned as being a big friend of farmers, and he won the state of Iowa 2 years ago in the presidential election. Do farmers now feel in any way that there's been any kind of betrayal? Are they upset with the president after he campaigned as being a big friend of this farm state?
You know, I can't speak for everybody. I'm sure there are some farmers that are very upset. You know, we just had the state fair, and we had a lot of discussion about this amongst pork producers and at the Pork Expo. And I think in general, pork producers understand why some of these things are happening, trying to get better deals. Now, you know, you hear the president saying NAFTA was a terrible deal. It depends on what sector you're in. For pork, NAFTA was great because we had free trade with Mexico and Canada without tariffs. But if you were in the washing machine manufacturing, it was terrible. So it just depends on what part of the economy you're in and what you're exporting. Or, you know, if you lose jobs to Mexico and you're in manufacturing, that's a bad deal for them. You know, in Canada, for example, we've got almost a 300% tariff on dairy products, which, and I'm not a dairyman, but it's not fair that we can't export to them and they can export to us. I think those are some of the things that the president and the administration are trying to rectify.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
For those of us who don't understand the business of farming, can you explain to us how exactly the tariffs are felt? How does it filter down? At what point do you feel it? How does the tariff filter down from the government level to the actual person himself, the businessman?
Yeah, I understand. So we don't sell direct as a pork producer or a grain farmer, we don't sell direct to any country. Mm-hmm. So what happens when a country puts a tariff on, let's say you put a tariff on, like Mexico, a 20% tariff on Mexico, the person that is exporting that, be it a packer like a Smithfield or a Tyson or a Hormel, they have to pay that tariff. Well, when they pay that tariff, that impacts what they can pay us for the pork.
So the packer is the company that actually sends it to the other country?
Yeah, either a packer or sometimes there's exporters, brokers, that's just their business, but a lot of it is sold via the packer.
So the tariff happens there?
Correct. They're trying to maintain their margins, so if it costs them more to export that product, then they're going to lower what they pay producers.
And do you sell pork to the packer, or do you sell to somebody who sells it to them?
No, we sell all of our pigs go to JBS in Marshalltown, Iowa.
And they're a packer?
Yes, they're a major packer. They're a packer processor. So they would slaughter the animals and then process into various cuts. And let me say another thing about why exports are so important. People say that we use everything but the squeal of the pig, and we do, but there's a lot of parts of the pig that are not relished by the U.S. consumer. So a lot of those products get shipped to countries that like those products. And for example, a lot of internal organs, skin, feet, tails, or the skin on the head, that sort of thing. When you go to markets in China, for example, or Mexico, you see these products. And so that adds a lot to the value that packer or the exporter gets, which then translates back to better prices for the pork producer.
So you feel the tariff when you see how much the packer is willing to pay you for the product. That's
correct.
Where it shows up.
Correct. Yeah. Right. And it's a supply and demand thing. Right now we have a large supply. So as supply kind of outstrips demand, then the price goes down. That's just basic economics, you know. And right now we've got a very large supply of corn. We have a large supply of pork right now, and beef and chicken.
And that, of course, leads to a downward price as well. The more that's available, the less the price is going to be. And we're just in the beginning, as you know, of this tariffs battle. How much patience, how much give do you think farmers have here in Iowa? How much can they withstand, and how long can they withstand this kind of pressure?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question, Dennis. You know, it's going to be different for everybody. I mean, I personally, and I can only speak for myself here, I personally feel like we're on the right track here, although I'm not happy about the tariffs because it is hurting our income. But I'm encouraged by what's happening. We have the Mexico deal. I think Canada is going to come back into NAFTA as long as we're talking to the Chinese. Negotiations with the Chinese are not going to be like the negotiations with Mexico. Mexico, it was more on the issues were like how you handle trade disputes, autos, things like that, the sunset clause and NAFTA. China is a lot bigger issue, and it's going to take a lot longer, I think, to resolve that because of all the intellectual property issues that are at the forefront of these negotiations. But different things affect the market, too. Yesterday, hogs were up the limit. They were up the $3 limit on the nearbys. Okay? Why is that? Well, we have a disease called African swine fever. It's a viral disease, very high mortality, very high morbidity that's been in Eastern Europe. I was just over there in this spring, and They have it in Poland and up in the Baltic countries, Russia. Well, now, just this last month, it's gotten into China. And we had like 3 cases reported and then another one. And then yesterday they had 3. We're up to 12 cases now. And these cases are scattered around in China. China is a huge consumer of pork. And so if they can't get this disease under control, they're going to have to go out on the international market and buy more pork, which could bode well for our pork prices. I mean, up $3 yesterday, that's a tremendous move, you know, especially when markets are low like they are right now. So I don't think we're going to see pork prices get into the profitable level here this fall. I think, you know, typically the fall you hope to kind of hang on and break even every year. We're below cost of production right now. If this African swine fever thing develops further in China, we could see that market maybe get back to a break even.
China's also a very big importer of soybeans, and we're the biggest, or very close to the biggest, producer of soybeans in the United States. China's really the key to much of our economy in the state, isn't it? We have to deal with them at some point here and get a deal.
Right, yeah. The soybeans, and I don't have the figures like I do for pork, but I think 1 out of every 4 rows of soybeans go to China. I've heard figures like that. So China needs soybeans. Now, right now, they're buying soybeans from Brazil and Argentina. Argentina just put a 10% tariff on soybean shipped out of Argentina. I think it was 10%, which is going to make them less competitive. Right now, from a market standpoint, from a cost standpoint, we would be very competitive going into China with soybeans. But what happens is that if Brazil is selling to country X and they sell all their soybeans to China, then that creates a market in country X for us. So it's this shift around. The problem with that is that all costs money. When you have to change your markets around, that costs. So we want a stable market. We want, like I said, the free trade agreement with Japan done. Japan right now is a huge market for us, and Japan is making free trade agreements. They just finished one with the EU, Australia. Those are countries that compete with us in that Japanese market. If we don't get a free trade agreement with Japan, we're going to be looking from the outside in, and our competitors are going to have a distinct advantage because we will have a tariff on our pork going into Japan.
From what I understand, China cannot replace our soybeans completely by buying from other countries. There's not that much production out there. Does that mean that you are more optimistic about possibly getting an agreement, or does that play into it at all, is between China and the president?
Yeah, now you're asking me to get my crystal ball out.
You bet.
I broke it on the way here. The China deal is much, much more complicated because of the issues at hand, like I said. Will American soybeans end up in China? Yes, they're going to end up in China one way or the other. They may be brokered through Brazil or Canada. Who knows? You know, they may come in through Hong Kong. I don't know all that, how all that works very well. But they need soybeans, and they're probably not going to get everything they need from Argentina or Brazil.
So, Mr. Hill, you said the Hog Association has lobbyists that are working in Washington, D.C. What is their main message right now?
I brought for you guys, our issues insight on trade. So I'll just read what the NPPC position is. It says, NPPC, which is the National Pork Producers Council, which is our advocacy program, wants the Trump administration to resolve ongoing trade disputes, including lifting the tariff on Mexican metal imports so it will drop the duties on U.S. pork. NPPC supports the progress on trade deals with Canada and Mexico. NPPC supports the U.S.-Japan free trade agreement. Without one, the U.S. can lose market share in Japan. So that's kind of our position. We understand why these tariffs went on, but as Dennis said, how long? Yeah, we have patience, but we don't have indefinite patience.
So it's not a crisis yet.
It's probably a crisis for some people. You know, it's going to be an individual thing for everybody. You know, the farm economy in general right now is not very good. So when commodity prices are down, we see what it does to the income of the state. So it definitely affects every Iowan because agriculture is such a big part of our economy.
Mr. Hill, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'd like to have you back.
You're welcome. I appreciate
the offer to be here.
Hopefully
with some better news.
Okay, thank you.
We've been talking with Howard Hill, hog farmer from Cambridge, Iowa, the owner of 3,000 acres of pigs and cattle and soybeans and corn on what's happening with our tariff battles with other countries. You're listening to Local Talk. My name is Dennis Hart. I'm here with Ursula Rudenberg, and we'll be back after this brief timeout. This is Local Talk on a Friday. As you know, every Friday for the last year or so, and on Mondays and Wednesdays as well, we have a news summary. And the news summary primarily has been provided through the courtesy of the Ames Tribune. We are going to be talking with Michael Crum, the editor of the Ames Tribune. We've been doing the Ames Trib summary of the week's news on Fridays. And it is a pleasure having you with us in person here. You and I have known each other for a period of time now. We talk about issues involving journalism and issues involving the Trib. We're happy to have you here today. I have your picture in front of me, as well as you, from an editorial you did just this past week about, let's hope the eulogies for John McCain weren't just cheap rhetoric. It's one of three editorials, major ones, that you've put in the paper in the last 2 or 3 weeks. One involving the disagreement between President Trump and journalists. This one, of course, involving John McCain. The other one involving Molly Tibbetts and how her death has been politicized. Those are heady, heady topics for a local newspaper of any size, much less the size of the Trib and the size of this community. Let's talk first about President Trump. He's talked about journalists being the enemy of the American people. He did it again last night in a campaign rally.
Correct.
It's never ending. What is your assessment of the state of American journalism?
It's a ridiculous assumption and statement that he's making, that the American press is the enemy of the people. Hopefully, most people see through that rhetoric and they understand the importance of maintaining a free press in this country and the integral role that it plays in maintaining our democracy. The press is strong in this country, whether it's at the local level, at small local papers like we have here in central Iowa, or whether it's the big national news outlets. It's strong. It has its place. It's doing its job. And one of the big challenges I think we do have, however, is still overcoming claims of fake news and the president's accusations of that. And where the line has been blurred, unfortunately, and particularly the cable networks, where that line has been blurred is between commentary and news, not at this level and really not at most print level journalism. Unfortunately, the cable news outlets have, and all of them do this, I think, they try to present commentary as being news. Unfortunately, too many people in this country view that as being news. They don't understand. If we at the Tribune only put things that were on our opinion page on the front page of our paper and said, hey, here's news, here's objective reporting, and the public bought into that, that would be disappointing to me. I think it's important that people understand the difference between commentary and objective reporting in news. The fact is, by doing our jobs as reporters and as news outlets, not only here in Ames but across the country, sometimes we ask really, really hard questions. We ask questions that sometimes don't make the person that we're asking that question of comfortable. We sometimes ask questions that, if those questions are answered honestly, maybe will portray that person not in the best light. And suddenly that's where people get upset and they start making those accusations of fake news because it's something they disagree with.
Michael, as you know, a significant number, polls show this, of the American people believe the president when he calls news media outlets fake news purveyors, and a significant amount of his base believes that any criticism of, and not criticism, any reporting of the president in a negative light, though factual, is in their minds fake news. How have we gotten to that point where maybe not half the country, but almost half the country doesn't believe what they read in the papers, though it be factual information?
One of the degradations of our society, and I'll use the word degradation probably, has been that the dialogue, the ability for people of opposing sides to sit down and have an intelligent, constructive, informed conversation seems to have almost disappeared. You and I can sit here and have a conversation, and there might be something that you and I wholeheartedly disagree about, and that's fine. Everyone has a right to an opinion. We hope that it's an educated and informed opinion. But the key is we have to respect people's rights to express themselves in a way that they want. Once we no longer respect people's rights as granted to them, in the First Amendment, I think that has really been a big issue that's led to the current state.
The conversation you and I are talking about no longer exists. And you wrote about this, the reaction to John McCain's death. As you know, his death created a vicious response on the internet, on Twitter and on Facebook, people demonizing John McCain after his death. We've seen the same sort of thing with Molly Tibbetts' death. As you know, robocalls have gone out. Some of them have reached the Tibbetts family claiming they are traitors to the white race. You have heard about that. You have written about that. Are you at all optimistic that we can get back to any kind of commonality in this country, or are we just too far gone on that?
I'm always going to be optimistic. I tend to be a rather hopeful person. It's really disappointing to see the state that things have reached. Molly Tibbetts' father wrote a very nice editorial in the Des Moines Register recently, basically asking people, leave my daughter out of this debate.
In fact, his closing line, or one of his closing lines, have you no sense of decency? I'm not sure every person reading that knew where that came from the Joe McCarthy hearings in the 1950s. When he was demonizing people, that almost brought tears to my eyes when he wrote that, because I knew what he was talking about.
In the editorial that I wrote about the Molly Tibbetts case, it was very frustrating, I think, to a lot of people to see that get sucked into the immigration debate almost
immediately.
I mean, the news conference maybe hadn't even ended yet, and it had gotten to levels of government where people in national government were using that as a political talking point. And it just shocked me. I've sat on people's front porches and talked to them after they've lost a child through a crime. I have sat around their kitchen tables. I've sat in lawn chairs on their front yard. They want justice for their child. They don't care about the person who committed the crime. They want justice, but what they want more than anything is for their child to be remembered for who they were, for the dreams that they had, for the unfulfilled things that will happen in their life, you know, going to college, getting married, having children, jobs, and all the things that as a parent you want your child to have growing up, and that's just stolen from them. And parents want their children to be remembered for who they are, not because of who killed them. We've all heard the other side of the debate saying, well, she'd still be alive if this person hadn't been in this country.
The focus on the political implications of the perpetrator once again disappears the person who's been lost. It's a second loss.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And really, I mean, almost equally as immediately, the family started to respond. Our child's death has nothing to do with the immigration debate. They've received an outpouring of support from people who are immigrants to people from all sides of the political spectrum. So it is disappointing to see those sorts of dialogues taking place in our community, generalized terribly probably, but we as a society are so quick to jump on those things and join the bandwagon for whatever reason. I don't see that as being something that happened 3, 4, 5 years ago. It definitely didn't happen 10, 15, 20 years ago, I don't believe.
Does the level of hatred, and I'm going to use that term in this country, the hatred that we saw after Mr. McCain died online, the hatred that we saw directed at the Tibbetts family after their daughter was killed, the hatred that we see at certain campaign rallies or rallies, events, at journalists, where people in the audience are yelling and screaming vile epithets at journalists. Does this concern you about the safety of people now, maybe reporters, maybe just people in general in this country with the hatred out there?
Yeah, I mean, there is a concern. I don't think it should be something that paralyzes us as reporters or as an industry or as a country. I would hope not. But I do believe that a lot of what you're talking about is directed more at the national media. Not to say that something couldn't happen at a local newspaper. I mean, it happened in Maryland.
It did.
The first thing I thought of was my newsroom and my reporting staff. But even then, we believe that we're the community's newspaper. We're not going to build a wall. We're going to be here because we believe that we should have that open dialogue with the community, with our readers, and give them a place where they can have a voice. And when I say that, I think it's important that I emphasize, give all of our readers a voice. I occasionally take a phone call or receive a letter to the editor that is extremely negative about something that I've written in an editorial or something that we've put on the opinion page, and people are surprised when I give them time to listen to them and let them air their grievances. I think people are shocked when I call them and say, hey, I appreciate you submitting this. I appreciate your opinion. we'll go ahead and publish this letter.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are shocked because they think that we are going to shut them down. And we're not going to shut down any voice in the community. We are a place where we want, where we think people should be able to feel free to come and express themselves freely, no matter what their opinion is.
Let me ask you briefly about the state of the Ames Tribune. There's no question in thinking people's minds that you are integral to the heart of this community. You are the ones who are there for city council meetings, for board of supervisors meetings, for school board meetings. No other entity in this community can be there for all of that. You're important. Is your health good? Are you going to be with us 20 years from now, 30 years from now?
We all know about the
state of newspapers.
Let me say this. And two, three times a year, I go out and I speak to different community groups. And that question is at some point brought up during every conversation. How long is the newspaper going to be around? The newspaper will be around forever. What form it takes and what it looks like is always evolving. For people who've been long-time readers of the Ames Tribune, they look back 20, 30, 40.
It's different now.
It's different today than it was then for a lot of different reasons, a lot of it because we now have so many tools at our disposal to get our news out there to our readers. I mean, you know, the internet and all the social media platforms that we can use now. No doubt the revenue sourcing has changed and shifted, and so we're always looking for alternative ways to generate revenue, and we've been successful at that. I think the Ames Tribune is a strong local paper. It will continue to be here, I think, for people who maybe have that fear. Hopefully, you know, they can rest a little easier. I know there are a lot of people in this town, and my publisher, Scott Anderson, and I were just talking about this yesterday, that we feel very fortunate that there are a lot of people in this town who really understand the importance of a local newspaper, particularly in a community this size. And so, yeah, the Ames Tribune's a solid paper, and we're going to continue to be here generations from now.
Will you be here in the form of print?
Oh, absolutely.
You will?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I say that today. 75 years from now, when I'm long gone, but right now I don't see any indication that print is disappearing. With every study or survey done that shows things are going digital, we're beginning to see some studies that now show that readers are beginning to pull back a little bit on that. And, and there was a cover article in Editor and Publisher, I mean, even as far back as maybe 18 months to 2 years ago, that talked about digital fatigue. I'm sitting here with my smartphone in front of me because it's attached to me almost 24/7, unfortunately. But it's difficult for people to consume the information they want the way they want to do it, because when you use this, as good of a tool as this is and as great as it is to read news, whatever your source is, on this.
This being the cell phone
or your laptop or whatever, tablet, you have a lot of interruptions.
Right.
You have a lot of distractions. I don't know too many people that actually use these for actually making calls anymore. But so people are beginning to realize, and I talk to a lot of people who you think this would be their main tool. And I'm talking about people in their 20s who say they still like to pick up the paper. They like to have the physical paper. They like that experience. They like that feel in their hands. They like that ability to sit down and read an article without getting 35, 40, 50 notifications about emails and other things that are popping up on their phones.
Really?
So, yeah, it's great.
We're speaking with Michael Crone from the Ames Tribune. Michael, this piece that went in the New York Times about the president's cabinet, that seems kind of a little bit out of the box. I've not seen a local or national newspaper print something like that takes on that level of government. As a news person, what's your response? What does it mean that the New York Times did that?
I think it is obviously it's getting a lot of attention, not only for the message that it contained, but for the way it was done. Generally, the tradition has been if you print a guest opinion piece, it is by a named individual.
Mm-hmm.
To open that door to anonymous sourcing on guest opinion pieces, I think, it opens that door for newspapers to across the country to at least consider that moving forward. So it could, I would hope not.
It could heighten the battle you were speaking about earlier.
It could. Because, I mean, anytime a news organization uses anonymous sourcing, we all know that it runs the risk of hurting the credibility. Right. And that's all we have is our credibility. Once you lose that credibility, it's really hard to get it back. And we at the Ames Tribune, I think we've used anonymous sourcing once in the 6 years I've been here, and I don't think it had been used for a number of years before that, probably.
So you don't think this will change how you do business?
No, it won't change how we do business, no.
Yeah, the danger of that piece in the Times is that, of course, we have, as readers, no idea what the credibility of that individual was, whoever wrote that op-ed piece. What level of access they had. We know nothing about that person.
We don't know what their motive or what their intent was. Obviously, with books coming out recently about the inner workings of the Oval Office and the Trump administration, there's a lot of interest in that, particularly by the other side of the political debate. So all those things are obviously garnering lots and lots of attention. But I think the media does need to be careful that we don't start using things and allowing things to be published that could damage our credibility.
Mm-hmm. But also, this was a paper that was clearly taking on the president.
Oh, yes.
The paper using its platform to say something about the president. That was kind of a step beyond what many papers have done in the past.
It is, but you look at the history of journalism and particularly, and I'll refer to them as the big boys of journalism, they've done it in the past.
I guess the Pentagon Papers was.
Yeah, exactly. And Watergate. And I mean, there are precedents for that being done. We'll see what kind of legs this has moving forward.
Michael, we thank you for coming in.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. And thank you so much for allowing us the pleasure, the opportunity to summarize the news from your paper every week on this broadcast. We appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome, and we appreciate you doing it.
Stick around, and we'll have some coffee.
All right.
Time. Michael Crum, the editor of the Ames Tribune, joining us. Ursula?
And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your host today, Mr. Dennis Hart, and myself, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. And Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays here at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and the information you heard during the program. KHOI streams live at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you. You can join the Local Talk team.
Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again
on radio. The radio. Stick around for coffee.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun every Saturday, located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza. The Farmers Market brings fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment.